Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. Please make sure you like, comment, and subscribe on today's video. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. And we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, speaker. Every week, we talk about how to love ourselves, others, and a higher nature, how to improve our finances, career, health, relationships, and spirituality. We have a special guest for today. We have Marcy Shimoff, who is holds an MBA from UCLA. She's the number one New York Times bestselling author for Happy for No Reason and Love for No Reason. The books have sold more than 15 million copies in 33 languages. She's a world-renowned transformational teacher and an expert on happiness, success, and unconditional love, and has addressed Fortune 500 companies, nonprofit organizations, and audiences worldwide. She's also the woman's face for the mega-selling Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and she loves or enjoys pickleball and hiking. Welcome, Marcy, to the show.
Thank you so much. So great to get to be here with you. I'm happy for great reason to get to be here.
I like that. Okay, that's perfect. So I'm glad that you also like some sports and nature stuff as well. That's kind of interesting. Now, I want to ask you something. You know, you've written some great books here. I have Have You For No Reason and Love For No Reason, which is a really very nice books. I've also written a few books. In fact, I have one called The Three Secrets of Happiness, which talks about things like gratitude, optimism, and forgiveness. And it's about a pompous psychiatrist who goes to the mountain and meets a martial arts teacher who teaches them that. I also have a book called Invincible You on personal transformation using East mind, body, and also Western psychology, positive psychology. And one called Love Types, which is a bestseller on Myers-Briggs and love compatibility. So I'm going to offer you a choice, Marcy, right now. Let's say I'm a genie and I have these three things here. I have love, I have happiness and success. Which would you choose?
Well, I think that love encompasses all of them.
Okay.
So I'm going to go for love because love to me is the highest energetic vibration and it encompasses happiness and success when it's authentic.
That's okay. I love that. And actually, I would give the same answer, love. But there are people I've talked to that they choose success or, you know, or happiness even because they think if I'm happy. But because your books kind of like go into that whole realm. And what I like is the idea that, you know, both happiness and love can be internal traits, as opposed to relying on external factors, which can change, as we know, and can disappoint and so forth. But I think I'm missing one thing here. On the trilogy, maybe you thought about this, but how about success for no reason? Have you thought about that one?
Well, that is a great idea. So right.
That could be
okay.
A trilogy.
There we go.
Right, because there is actually in the East, you may have heard of a karma and the idea that when you work, you should give the fruits of your labor to the higher. It could be God or spirit, whatever it is.
Yes.
But don't work for the results, because when you do, you become very tied to it, right? Your ego becomes attached to it and you suffer. But if you work and give the results to the higher, whatever that might be, community or you know, the world, then you can work with infiniteness.
Well, I am 100% on board with all of that. I like to call it high intention,
yes,
low attachment.
Oh, okay. Very interesting.
And,
very
you know, there's also a word in the Eastern philosophy. So you brought up karma is the word dharma. And dharma is about our life work, our destiny,
right.
What it is that is most aligned for us. And my feeling is that when we're working, doing the work that is truly the most aligned for us, what we're called for in this life, and we do it with that act of service and open-hearted love and with high intention, low attachment, then we do have success.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, the idea of happy for no reason, I really like that. And then you said you studied the 100 happiest people, I guess, in the U.S., and you came up with a book and the different principles. And you also talk about the happiness set point. This is something in positive psychology where people have a certain level of happiness. If you win the lottery, you know, you'd be excited, but then you may go down. If you're depressed before, you might go down to that level. Or some people are happy and they lose a limb and then they get depressed, but then they can come up back to the happiness. Well, tell us about that. Is there a happiness set point and can we change it?
Yeah. So according to the research, to me, this is like one of the most exciting pieces of research in the field of positive psychology. I think that science has actually cracked the happiness code and we know what it takes to be happier. And as far as I'm concerned, that should be headline news and should be taught in all the schools to kids when they're quite young. Yes. And so the happiness set point is just like you said, it's like a thermostat setting. And no matter what happens to us, whether it's good or bad, we will tend to hover around our thermostat setting. So we can get really happy about something, but then we return to that thermostat setting. So the happiness set point is the key to it all. And the set point is determined by three different things. And the first is our circumstances. But only 10% of our happiness set point is determined by our circumstances, such a tiny little piece of the pie. And yet everybody's out there running around trying to get their circumstances to look okay to be happy. But that's only 10% of the pie. 50% is our genes, our DNA. And the other 40% is our habits of thoughts and behavior, which is where we have the most ability to shift. And I tend to also go along with the scientists in the field of epigenetics that study the genes and our DNA, like Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief. And they say that our DNA can be influenced by our habits of thoughts and behavior, which to me means that up to 90% of that happiness set point can be shifted by shifting some very specific habits.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And I do like the way you set up your paradigm. You say happy for a bad reason, which is people that may use drugs or other things to elevate temporarily and then they crash afterwards. Happy for a good reason, which could be healthy experiences, you know, good relationships or career success. And then, but the last one is happy for no reason, which is inner well-being, something like a peace within. So that's a very interesting way that you put it. Because most people probably look for happy for good reason, which is most common, right? Like make more money, success, and love and relationships. So you came up with kind of a new approach to this idea.
Yeah, I actually, at the very bottom, it's not unhappy. You know, that's the very bottom.
Oh, and happy, that's really bad. We don't want that one.
Yeah, unhappy. And then there's happy for bad reason, which is you're unhappy. And so you're going to search outside of yourself for things that are not life-sustaining to nourish you, you know, fill that hole. And that only leads to addictions. Sure. And then, as you said, happy for good reason, it's, you know, I'm happy because I have a great partner, or I'm happy because I have a great job, I'm happy because I have, you know, wonderful home, whatever it is. There's nothing wrong with those things. What's wrong is when we base our happiness on those things, it's transitory, it's not lasting. And so it's fine, it's great. There's nothing, I'm saying there's nothing wrong with it. But the real kind of happiness that I think we're all really looking for is that inner state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on our circumstances. And that's happy for no reason.
Yes.
And that's what will last.
Definitely. That's very powerful. And then you have a few principles you talk about. One that says, what expands makes you happier. Mm-hmm. We know that in the East, there's something called ki or chi energy, kind of a universal energy that comes within. So you can be extending it outwardly. You could be smiling, you know, happy, talking to people, or you can be very, you know, withdrawn, sad, and depressed. So that's an important part, to extend or expand that energy. That helps a lot.
Yeah, the way I look at it is that we really have two main energies in life. There's the energy of contraction and the energy of expansion. And when we're in the energy of contraction, it's very hard to feel happy. You know, often I'll ask people to curl up into a little ball and get really, really contracted. And in fact, if you're listening to this right now, you might want to just try it out with me. Get curled up into a little ball, get really tight. And on the count of three, I want you to say, I feel happy. Ready? One, two, three. I feel happy. Okay. Now you can sit up. Did you feel happy? Probably not. Hard to feel good when you're contracted. Okay. The opposite is also true. It's hard to feel bad when you're expanded. So expand your arms out to the side, get really kind of open and big. And on the count of three, say, I feel depressed, with all that kind of open energy, and see what happens. So one, two, three, I feel depressed. All right. Do you feel depressed? Probably not. That's expansion. Does that mean I want you to walk around like that all day long? No, they'll lock you up. What it does mean is that when we move towards that which helps us feel more expanded in life, and sometimes we have to go through a period where it's uncomfortable. I'm not saying that it won't feel uncomfortable, but that movement towards expansion is what moves us towards greater happiness.
I like that. Yeah, I do an exercise in my college classes, and then we talk about the facial feedback hypothesis, where, you know, your facial muscles can actually, when you smile, it actually releases certain brain chemicals that actually make you feel happier. That's a very powerful idea.
Exactly. Yes. Smile experiment. Looking at somebody else smiling has the effect
as
well. Right.
Contagion is very powerful. Yeah. Now, you also talk about universes out to support you. What you appreciate. So gratitude, of course, we know research shows it's a very powerful tool for, you know, reducing depression, increasing happiness. So you talk about those things. Those are really powerful. Now, the other thing I like is that you talk about the foundation like a house. So you have several pillars of this happiness for no reason. You start with the foundation which she said is the ownership of happiness. So looking at stop complaining, look for the lesson and the gift, and rejection is God's protection. So tell us about that, because people feel bad when they're rejected either in a relationship or in a work or something. How is that God's protection?
Yeah, so first of all, let me just back up a tad and explain that what I found in my research on happiness is that there were 21 main happiness habits, and I found that they fell into 7 main categories. And it's really hard for anybody to remember 7 of anything. So I created this metaphor that I call building your inner home for happiness. Yes. A home has 7 main components. It's got a foundation, 4 corner pillars, a roof, and a garden. And so what you're asking me about to begin with is the foundation. Right. And the foundation is taking responsibility for our happiness. That means not showing up in life as a victim, but showing up as an empowered person. And a victim in life, you know you're in a victim attitude when you're doing one of 3 things: blaming, shaming, or complaining. Blaming is blaming somebody else. I can't be happy because my husband is not very nice, or I can't be happy because I had a really bad childhood, my mother, blah, blah, blah. That's blaming somebody else. Shaming is blaming yourself. I can't be happy because I'm just, you know, not a good person and it'll never happen to me. And then complaining is blaming the circumstances. I can't be happy because it's raining out, and how could anybody be happy when it's raining, or whatever it is. So anytime you find yourself blaming, shaming, or complaining, you are in a victim mode and you cannot find happiness from that place.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Also, you talked about pillar of the mind. Don't believe everything you think. And we know about self-defeating thoughts. That was called superego shadow. Critical inner voices that we have. You're not good enough. You're not going to make it in life. You even mentioned that a lot of this comes from your own childhood. You said apparently you were not a wanted child or pregnancy at some point. And then you even mentioned the word cootie girl or cooties. And I think of cooties like with little kids, you know, they got cooties. How did you get that cootie thing going?
Yeah, I have wonderful parents, but I was, my mother at least, didn't want a third child. I have a brother and a sister who are 10 and 12 years older, and I was kind of the mistake.
Oh, okay.
And so throughout my life, they were very loving. And my mother used to say, honey, you may not have been wanted, but you were always loved. She actually, when she was, before she got pregnant, she said she threatened to drive off into the ocean if she ever got pregnant again.
Wow.
And she lived right near the ocean in San Francisco. And so she would tell the story to me in this way that she thought was loving. Honey, I'm so glad I didn't drive into the ocean. You may not have been wanted, but you were always loved. And she thought this was this great story. But all I kept hearing is that little girl was, I wasn't wanted.
So mixed messages, but you picked up on the negative side of the message.
Exactly. And, you know, so what the result of that was over-efforting, feeling like as a young kid, we project out what it is we were feeling. You know, these kids don't want me. Do I have cooties? And so these are old thought patterns, neural pathways in the brain that get established that we need to rework.
Makes sense. And then you move into a few other areas. The heart is things like gratitude and forgiveness. The body, you know, diet, exercise, you know, taking care of your body. The soul, you know, connecting to the higher source, meditating, praying, and so forth. And the life unfolding, that was an interesting idea. Is that like surrendering to the higher power, or what does that mean?
Are you talking about under the pillar of the soul?
Of the soul, yes.
Yeah, on the soul. So the soul to me means feeling your connection to a greater energy of the universe. I don't care what you call it, whether you call it God or the divine or creative intelligence or nature, it doesn't matter. But feeling that sense that we are in this loving universe. You know, Einstein said, he said, the most important question a person can ask themselves is this a loving universe? Mm. And what I found is that, is this a friendly, benevolent universe? Is this a benevolent universe? And what I found is that happy people will always say yes to that. Mm. That doesn't mean that life is necessarily going their way or the way they want it to go. Right. What it means is they believe that life is for them. And so if something is happening to them, there is a greater, I would say, trust in, in opening to what's the gift in this for me. Mm. And so when I say surrender, what I'm really talking about is surrendering to a presence of a loving universe that is on your side.
That makes a lot of sense. And then, of course, you get to the roof, following your passion. And the garden is cultivating nourishing relationships. We need to water and give praise and all that. You also mentioned the term emotional immunity, which is interesting because, you know, with mood contagion, we do pick up other people's emotions. And I just had Judith Orloff on the show. Do you know who Judith
is? Oh, I love Judith.
Yeah, she did.
Great person.
Stuff, you know, she did, her new book is on empathy, the gift of empathy, you know, the genius of empathy. And the idea that, you know, highly sensitive people, they take in a lot of this negative energy from other people, and that affects them a lot. I don't know. Do you have that yourself? I mean, I know you're a feeler on the Myers-Briggs, you told me.
Yes, that. I am. You know, I think that a lot of people who are maybe on the more spiritual path or the growth path tend to be empaths. Right. I teach a program called Your Year of Miracles, and we have 5,000 people in the program from around the world. And I would say 85% of them are empaths. And so what I found is how important it is to build your own emotional immune system where if you go into a room and somebody's got a cold and you don't want to catch their cold, you create your physical immune system. Yes. Same with if you're an empath or if you're around people who are negative, you build up your own emotional immunity so that their negativity more bounces off of you. And may I tell just a quick story about this?
Sure, of course.
So I've had the great honor of getting to meet His Holiness the Dalai Lama a few times and be in a small room with him, a small group with him. Right. And, you know, he's certainly a great proponent of the study of happiness and a great example of it. And I remember one time we were in this small group, maybe 25 people, and there was, and we were about to meet with him. And there was this guy in the room who was really negative. And I could feel all of us kind of being nervous, like what's going to happen when the Dalai Lama comes in. And as soon as the Dalai Lama walked in, he just radiated joy. You couldn't miss it. And the really negative guy suddenly became just open and loving. And my feeling is the strongest energy wins. So you want to be the strongest energy of true, and I'm not talking about fake happiness, but true, authentic, higher set point happiness, so that the people around you pick that up rather than you picking up their negativity.
So positive emotional contagion is another positive factor, right, to pick it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. And then I'll tell you a story. Back in the day, I was at this seminar, this marketing, I guess they call him guru, you know, very well-known, very successful marketing person. And I was listening to it with a colleague. And then I walked out during the break, and actually I saw a couple of men actually at a table, and they had a bunch of books stacked up. They were actually selling the books at the seminar. I thought, what is this? And then I think you might know who I'm talking about. This is Jay Abraham, who's a marketing guy, and these are Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, who created the... So they were applying and this is when they were first starting out, so no one knew about them. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then years later, they got this multi-million salary, and you're part of that too. So you're the woman's face of that. So how did that come about?
Yeah, you know, let me tell a very quick story on top of that.
Okay, a story on top of a story. Okay.
I had a sense that you were going to that to Mark and Jack, and they are the co-creators of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Right. And many people don't know this part of the story, but when Jack and Mark came up with the book, they actually didn't know the title for it. At first, it was called like 101 Great Stories, and that wasn't going to go very well. And they made a commitment to each other to meditate every day for about 15 minutes and until the book title came to them.
Wow.
And I think maybe a week or two into this commitment they had to each other, Jack, in the middle of his meditation, sees this can of Campbell's soup. Chicken soup written on the side. Okay. And he said, oh, now what's that doing in my meditation? Right. And then he said, oh, chicken soup is for the body, but these stories are chicken soup for the soul. And that's the way it came about. And they did not have instant success. They went to 144 publishers before one small, almost failing at the time, publisher said, we'll take a chance on this. Right. So they really had to believe in themselves and believe that, you know, persistence.
Really. Yeah, and the hustling and the work and, you know, all the, you know, getting out there. And you became part of this phenomena. Now, I'm kind of curious, how did you come up with your titles? The No Reason thing. Did that come automatically?
Well, interestingly, Jack was my mentor. I was teaching self-esteem for women. And I had, this was about a year into the original Chicken Soup for the Soul book that was out. And there only one book had been out, the original one.
Right.
And I had gone away on a 7-day silent meditation retreat. A friend of mine looked at me and said, "Marcy, you are burned out. You need to come away with me for silence, 7 days of silence." I looked at her. I said, "Silence? I haven't done more than 2 hours of it in my life. I'm a speaker."
But you're an extrovert. I think you're a talker. I can tell. No,
you like. I am a talker. So, so I remember very reluctantly going away on this 7-day retreat, and on the fourth day, in the middle of a meditation, it was as though a light bulb went off in my head and I saw the words "chicken soup for the woman's soul." And I knew that that was, I call it a, you know, a gift from the divine.
Right.
The only problem with this great epiphany was that I still had 3 more days of silence and couldn't tell anybody my great idea. But as soon as it was over, I ran to the closest payphone and called up Jack and said, "Oh my God, chicken soup for the woman's soul." He said, "What a great idea. I can't believe nobody's thought of it." And he called the publisher who said the same.
So all writers out there meditate 50 minutes a day for a week. And then you'll get
there
a
bestseller.
That's the key, right? Okay. Now, speaking of bestsellers and all, you did have Love for No Reason, which is a follow-up apparently. This is unconditional love, which we talk about a lot on Love University. Is known by many terms, agape, unconditional love, bhakti, devotion, karuna, compassion. You've mentioned a few term, a Jewish term, I think it's ahavat chinam, is that said right?
Yes.
Groundless, unconditional love, parama, prima, supreme love. So there's a lot of terms for this.
Yes.
And also, Marianne Williamson actually was on my show when she was running the first time for president and the spiritual author. I think she
also a very good friend. She wrote the foreword.
Yeah, I was going to say that, the foreword. And her idea is, putting love in politics and stuff like that.
Yes.
So your idea of unconditional internal love. So the same thing, love for no reason. So you have the love inside is not based on an external relationship. That's pretty powerful. So tell us about that, invitation to higher love and all that. How does that work?
So it's interesting that we teach what we most want to learn.
True.
And I really wanted to learn about unconditional love.
Yes.
And Happy for No Reason had come out and was quite successful. And I said, what's the next thing that I would really want to study and write about? And it was love.
Wow.
And no sooner did I sign the contract to write Love for No Reason than my husband and I separated.
Oh.
And I remember one day sitting there feeling this enormous pain that my love had been taken away. And I realized as I was sitting there, I was still feeling the love. And I realized, wait a second, the love doesn't live in the object of the love. The love lives within me.
Yes.
And so I actually worked on really cultivating that inner state of love.
Yes.
And about a year later, the book came out and I was feeling so much more deep inner love. And my husband and I got back together and we're going on 24 years right now.
Congratulations. So. Is he in the psychology business or something like that?
He is a psychotherapist.
Oh, okay. What's his name, if you can say?
Sergio Baroni.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So the inner love attracts the outer love. That's kind of the idea.
That's what I believe.
And
that's
also,
what I've experienced, I should say. And I've seen it in the lives of so many people around me.
Exactly. One of the things that we know, one of the biggest maladies in the world is loneliness. Loneliness is great, unfortunately, a disease in some ways. It can affect also your heart and other things. And you talk about it as being disconnected from your source, right? From your higher love.
Mm-hmm.
So how do people do that? How do they reconnect? Let's say they're feeling lonely. A lot of people are disconnected from themselves, other people, or even a higher source.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reconnect with love?
Yeah. I think all disconnection is disconnection from the truth of who we are, from our essence. I believe that our essence is love, that our essence is this connection to the greater spiritual, the greater energy of the universe.
Right.
And I think different people connect with that in different ways.
Hmm.
For many people, it's through meditation. For some people, it's through song or chanting or devotion, as you said. For others, it's through nature through all of them. I think what's important is that we recognize the first step is to stop looking for love in all the wrong places. We are in our society has taught us to look for love out there.
Right.
And out there is never a place of lasting of true love. When we start to experience ourselves as love, then life is seen through the lens of love. And that's, I think, what we're all looking for.
Right. Because you use the same paradigm. You say love for bad reasons. I'm thinking of people that are addicted to love. They pick dysfunctional relationships. Love for good reason could be a healthy relationship, but even that has ups and downs, right? Just jealousy.
Right.
But then you say love for no reason is the pure unconditional agape, karuna, whatever you call it, oneness with love. And that's the highest level. You're saying that's the most powerful. And then you break it down. You talk about doorways of love, so different ways to do it. You talk about safety as an important factor, vitality, having energy and so forth, and stuff like that. So tell us more about those factors as well.
Well, when I looked at all the aspects of love, I looked at there's really different energies that relate to love. And I saw that they actually relate to the chakra system.
Ah.
They relate to, you know, the energy of safety, you know, and I can open up. There's a safety that I feel has to do with the root chakra. The energy of vitality or creativity is the second chakra. The energy of empowerment and self-love is the third chakra. The energy of giving and receiving is the heart chakra. The energy of expression and listening and expressing is the throat chakra. Mm. The energy of visioning, imagination, seeing is the energy of the third eye, the sixth chakra. And then crown chakra is the energy of oneness with all of life. Wow. So I'd like to look at love from each of those angles and see each one of those as a doorway into love.
Interesting. One time I went to Orange County, there's a place, kind of a spiritual place, a bookstore, and they actually took a picture of my aura, apparently.
Uh-huh.
And they found it was actually here in the throat area, and it was blue, the color.
Yes.
Said, you know, because sometimes I get sore throats and, you know, I do talk and all that. So I'm wondering about that. Do you endorse that kind of stuff? Do you believe it?
Well, I certainly don't know. I can't say that I am a scientist and I know that, and I understand the science behind it all, but I have seen that I believe that everything is energy and the different expressions have different kinds of colors to them. Like the throat chakra is the color blue, the heart chakra is green and I do notice for myself that when I do meditations that focus on those various energy centers and their colors, that I have, I notice some opening. So I just say, what I tell people is try things on for yourself, see what works for you.
Hmm. Do you know what would say your chakra point is right now, would you say, in life?
Well, I think it's not about one specific chakra as much as I think it's about an actual openness and balance in all of them, because they all connect with each other. Mm. I'd say, you know, probably my predominant energy where I think I spend a lot of time is in the heart chakra. Ah. I feel like the work that I do is very heart-centered and very much about opening to love, but it certainly is about all of the energies working together.
I see. Now, in terms of your books, I mean, they're really well written. I don't see any more books. Are you still writing, or what's your goal for a future?
Well, I am working on, I teach for the last 10 years, I've been teaching this program, Your Year of Miracles, and it's about how we step into what I call the miracle zone. And the miracle zone is that place where you're in flow, where life is just, you feel like the wind is at your back and it's just all, you know, you're moving along, the right ideas come, the right phone calls come, all of that. Right. And so I am in the process of, I've been collecting amazing stories from the people who have been through the Year of Miracles program. And I'm working on a book called Living in the Miracle Zone.
Ah, I like that. Very nice. So that's something I'd love to have you back about.
Yes.
Living in the Miracle. So, and a miracle, how do you define it? Because people think of supernatural intervention or it could be everyday life. How would you say?
Yeah. Miracle? So I define, first of all, the word miracle, according to Webster's Dictionary, is a surprise and welcome event that can't be explained by science that's often attributed to divine grace.
Mm.
So we can't scientifically explain miracles. We can't create miracles.
Right.
What we can do is we can create the conditions for miracles to flow into our lives. And that's what I'm inviting people to do, is just setting up the circumstances so that you notice them, so that you're there to receive the amazing flow that's coming your way. And a miracle can be anything from, you know, I've always wanted to get pregnant and I'm suddenly pregnant, to I needed $1,200 to pay a bill and I had no idea where it was going to come from. And out of the blue, I got a check from somebody from 30 years ago for $1,200. Or it's, you know, it's an answer to a prayer, or I've, it can be anything. It can be very, very small things. I was thinking of my friend and they called me. So it's any kind of experience where you feel like you are in the flow of life and there's just like, wow, how did that happen?
Right. Synchronicity is a term I think Jung used.
Exactly.
You know, meaningful coincidences, and things that go with each other. And, you know, they've actually done studies on luck, where actually people who are optimistic are luckier in life. They may win the lottery, they get into the right relationships and careers. Because lucky people could be in, waiting in line at a store and they talk to someone in front of them and think, well, maybe I'll learn something or make a connection or a friend. People who are unlucky in life say, oh, I don't want to bother. I mind my own business. So they're not as open. So I assume that so creating miracles can be something that you put yourself out there to do. You put yourself in that.
I think that, yes, you there are certain specific things that you do to open up to receive them. You know, and some of them have to do with choosing where we put our energy and attention, because we have a choice. We can put our energy and attention on what isn't working, or our energy and attention on what is working. And the people that put it on what is working, they open up to more, as you would say, luck. You know, a dear friend of mine, two dear friends of mine wrote a book called Conscious Luck, Gay Hendricks and Carol Klein. It's really, you know, I think there was a great saying that luck is when opportunity meets readiness or something like that. And I think that preparedness, where preparedness and opportunity meet.
Right.
So we do our part to be prepared and ready. And then we also open up to the more cosmic part to allow it to come our way.
Very beautifully said. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show today, Marcy. I think there's a lot of power in what you're saying. And where can people hear more about you? Do you have any coaching workshops, other stuff you're working on?
So two things. I do this annual program called Your Year of Miracles, and you can find that at youryearofmiracles.com. And we also have some free gifts on there about moving into the miracle zone. And then also, if you're interested in the work on happiness, I certify once a year, I certify people to become happy for no reason trainers. And you can find out about that at happyfornoreason.com.
Do you have another personal website as well? Or is that the main site?
Those are them. You can find me at either of those, both of those.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Marcia, it's been wonderful having you on the show. And I like the idea of having that internal feeling, right? Whether it's happiness or love, we can cultivate and then externalize it and then attract more positivity and generosity. And you know, I think we need that in the world. I mean, we're living in a world where there's a lot of turmoil. So bringing that is a beautiful thing. I'd love to have you on again, talk about more books and more activities that you're working on.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for all of the great work you do, Dr. Alex. I think it's fantastic. And I'm really, really happy to be connecting with you. I honor what it is you do.
Yeah, I'd really appreciate it. So again, everyone, if you want to comment on today's show, you can reach us at 310-226-8090. You can visit us at loveuniversity.love. Write to us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com. So until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila. Put it where your notebooks, your iPads, your phones. Class at Love University is now dismissed. That was a great interview with Marcy Shimoff, the best-selling author, the face of Chicken Soup for the Soul, for the woman's soul, and a great inspiration with her books, Happy for No Reason, also Love for No Reason. And what she's really talking about is that we have this internal trait within ourselves. Whether it's love or happiness, we have the template. So we have the genes for it, but we need to develop it. We need to bring it out in the open. And by doing that, we can bring the love and the happiness externally, outwardly, so other people can resonate with who we really are. As opposed to just trying to, you know, chase and go after happiness, whether it's through money, love, accomplishments, whatever it might be, or happiness the same. So many people go after things externally. They try to find love in the form of other people, try to find happiness in the form of money, career success, or other experiences. But they're often unhappy, unfulfilled, or disappointed because even if they get what they want more of it, or they may fear they lose it. But with this approach, you start from the inside out, happy and love in yourself. Again, I love university students. This is the key for many things that we do at Love University is to love yourself, others, and the higher nature, and to extend the loving energy without expectation. That's the most powerful thing of all. For more information on what we're doing You can visit us at loveuniversity.lab. You can click on the links below to like and follow us on social media. You can go to our YouTube Love University channel, like, comment, and subscribe. So until next time, everyone put away your notebooks, your iPads, your phones. Class is now dismissed. Marcia, how did you find that?
Wow, you do your homework. That was amazing. I don't think I can't remember the last time I've been interviewed by somebody who had done that much homework. I am so impressed.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.